It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielso Lake puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Sports Saturday is proudly brought to you by SRE.com. This is Cougar Sports Saturday. Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for three! Cougars by 20!
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans.
For Cougar fans.
It's Cougar Sports Saturday.
Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Maimonte.
On your legacy home of BYU Sports. KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
What's up, Cougar fans, and welcome inside another edition of Cougar Sports Saturday here on January 15th. Matt Maimonte and Mitch Harper. Loaded show planned. There's BYU basketball tonight. That tips at 9 p.m. You can watch BYU in San Francisco on CBS Sports Network. So a lot of basketball, especially coming off the heels of that blowout loss against Gonzaga, and some football stuff as well, Mitch.
Yeah, we'll have Mark Durant coming up in the third hour to live from the Hilltop in San Francisco to get a preview of that BYU-San Francisco game tonight. And then we'll also be joined coming up a little bit later this hour to get a way too early look at the BYU football season in 2022 with the Zone's own Hans Olsen, host of Hans and Scotty G. He makes his debut appearance on Cougar Sports Saturday, part of that great collaboration with KSL Sports and the Zone Sports Network. So excited to have former BYU D lineman and radio host Hans Olsen on the program today. But we got to start things off with that mess in the kennel on Thursday night. BYU falls to the Zags. It starts it off in the leadoff.
The leadoff. A look at the stories making headlines right now. It's time for the leadoff on Cougar Sports Saturday.
110-84. Gonzaga puts up 110 points. Even Mark Pope himself said he's never been part of a basketball game that saw an opponent score 100 points with 6 minutes to go. But Gonzaga was off the charts good once again. Number two Zags take down BYU, and the Cougars are now 14-4 overall in the season, Matt. 2-1 in West Coast Conference play. How do you feel coming out of this game? Is it a feeling of, oh, BYU's not good enough to be an NCAA tournament team? How are you feeling right now?
You're going to call me crazy when I tell you this, but I'm feeling pretty dang good considering a 26-points loss, because if Gonzaga plays like that, Mitch, they'd probably beat the Los Angeles Lakers the way the Lakers are playing right now. I mean, you shoot nearly 70% from the field. You shoot above 50% from three. You got three players over 20. Timmy goes for 30. They'll win a national championship for the first time in program history if they play like this. They lead the country in field goal percentage at just a tick above 50%, 52, 53%. And they shoot 70%. It's just ridiculous. Nobody is beating this team when they play like that. And I was looking at some stats throughout the Pope tenure against Gonzaga. In 2020, so that was obviously last year when they lost to them three times, and they made it close down in the tournament and couldn't get them. Gonzaga averaged 50% from the field in those wins, which is a little below their season average. And throughout the duration of the Pope era, they're averaging 48% shooting. If they shoot 48% in this game, then it's a close basketball game. It could go either way. So I walk away from this game feeling if Gonzaga plays down to their average and they're not in the kennel, I think BYU has a chance to beat them with the type of performance they had. They scored 84 points. Alex Marcel looked great. Caleb Lohner showed up. There was a lot of good there. It was just Gonzaga's one of the best teams. And when they play to their best, which is, I think, what we saw against BYU in that loss was Gonzaga at their best. Multiple people scoring in the post. great three-point shooting, good defense. If they play like that, nobody's beating them, but they're not always going to play like that. So I'm actually encouraged by that.
Here's my big takeaway, and I think you make some great points there. My big takeaway is that the Big 12 Conference is going to be a lot easier to win than the WCC.
Whoa, really?
Look, the Big 12 Conference is the best league in college basketball, but no one's going to beat Gonzaga. Like, you lose one game in the kennel, and now you're playing for second place. No one's going to beat them. The Zags are 104-0 against teams not named BYU and St. Mary since 2014. Like, that's what's frustrating about the loss, is that now you're playing for second place in a league. Whereas even in the Big 12, Kansas, you know, lost five games last year. Baylor lost a couple. Baylor's already lost a game, and they're the best team in college basketball this year. They've already dropped a game. I just think that the West Coast Conference, I know the names of the programs in and of itself kind of make BYU fans go, eh, meh. Like, I know I'm not trying to be arrogant because BYU's never won the thing, but it's still just a deal in the WCC where you know now you're playing for second place. No one's going to touch the Zags, and now you're just playing for an at-large bid, and it's kind of Groundhog Day every single year in this league. I thought for a second after Gonzaga lost to Baylor last April, I thought maybe they'll take a little bit of a step back, and I guess you could say they have because they've lost two games, but still, Gonzaga is just a juggernaut that just will never be brought down, and I think, too, for BYU, when they get to the Big 12, their recruiting will be elevated. They'll get better personnel because this coaching staff with Mark Pope, Cody Feger, Chris Burgess, Nick Robinson, they're going to get some big-time recruits when they're members of the Big 12, but when you're in the WCC and you're going up against a Gonzaga team that features Chet Holmgren.
Chet was no good. Caleb Loader was better than Chet.
That dude made some plays, though. Like, that one move he had in the first half.
Okay, he had a nice spin move dunk, but
he's a top three pick.
I wouldn't sniff him in the top 10 right now. He is still a project, in my opinion.
Now,
Timmy, on the other hand, that dude is player of the year
caliber. Holmgren could be a byproduct of the CAA, like that agency group he's with. They kind of hype guys up. They gas them up a bit, but, you know, Caleb Loader, I thought he was a guy that I was excited for coming out of this game. And let me just say this, too. There was a lot of talk about the comments that he made. I'll tell you what, Matt. We were there at the media availability on Tuesday when Caleb Loader said a comment. And the question was, because I'm bringing this up because Gonzaga fans were zeroing in on Caleb. They were booing him every time he touched the ball. When he was on the bench, they're like, "We want Caleb." It worked out for him because he got 17 points. And he had his best offensive performance of the season. But his comment to me on Tuesday, literally hearing it live, I didn't even blink. Usually when we're in the media and we hear a comment that you know is
controversial,
some trash talk, some controversial take, it stands out. You know, Caleb Loader was asked, where does this game rank on some of the biggest games that you've ever played? And basically he was just like, this is we respect the heck out of Gonzaga. This is a huge game. You're gonna have a huge measuring stick. We hate those. Everyone hates those guys, and we're ready to play the game. It was basically more of a, everyone hates them because they're so dang good.
Yes.
It wasn't more of like, I just hate them. Their family poured this on me.
Not a Max Hall type.
No, it was much ado about nothing. I didn't even blink. So when BYU fans were going, what is this hatred about? It wasn't a storyline in the media because really we were like, this is much ado about nothing. And there was a tweet put out by another outlet that kind of just clipped one of the quotes, and it made it seem like it was more controversial than it was. And even Loader said that the quote was taken a little bit out of context. Like, I'm not looking to give you this agenda on behalf of Caleb Loader. Like, I really, when we were there, I didn't even blink when he said it because it was more of, it's like how everyone views Duke out on the East Coast. Everyone hates them because they're so dang good.
Yep.
Everyone hates Gonzaga because they're so dang good. And I think Cougar fans today should feel the same way because no one is ever taking down Gonzaga. When are they getting in the Big 12 already?
I'm glad that Caleb Loader said that because I feel this might be a boost. I wrote this in an article for KSL Sports, Mitch, but him, if this means he's out of the slump, and going forward, you can rely on him to give you double-digit points and close to double-digit rebounds. That is more significant going forward than beating Gonzaga one time in the kennel. Because you won't win an NCAA tournament game if Caleb Loader is playing like he was the first half of the year. You get this Caleb Loader in the loss to Gonzaga, I think you can win an NCAA tournament game. So that was huge. And I do disagree with you that Gonzaga can't be had. I still feel like what we saw on Thursday night was the best Gonzaga will ever be.
They could be had. They're above their average tournament. when there's teams that actually have a pulse.
No, I mean, think they could be had in the Marriott Center or down in the WCC tournament. I just don't think they're going to shoot 70% every time they play BYU.
Yeah, BYU could beat them once, but BYU, they lose tonight, it's over. Like, they're not playing for the conference title. Like, I mean, you got to hope for a miracle.
The regular season title?
Yeah. That's,
well, no one gives a rip because it doesn't even matter.
So then what are we even talking about then this for?
Hey, I've been trying to make this point for years that winning that the automatic bid should be tied to the regular season title, not to the tournament title. So all that matters is that you get him in the tournament, technically speaking, because that's what determines a quote-unquote conference champion.
And in Vegas, it's pro Gonzaga crowd because they lock around they lock up their spring break around that event, and it's probably the most the least fan friendly event you're going to have in conference tournaments because it's set up on a Monday and a Tuesday. It's work day, so no one can really get to it.
Yeah.
It's a pain. Bring on the Big 12 already, please.
Hey, we can agree on that. So I am ready for the Big 12. So. Look, BYU will get another crack at them at the Marriott Center. I expect the place to be sold out. It's going to be a good crowd. I think it'll be a much closer game down in Provo.
Yeah, I think so, too. And, I mean, 2020 was an example of that. Pope's team got smoked with Jake Toulson and those guys, and then they bounce back and get it done in Provo. It could happen. Marriott Center Magic is a tangible thing. It's the best venue in the WCC.
In other words, you're not feeling very good after getting blown out in the kennel.
Well, I think that this BYU team, oddly enough, made progress offensively. And that's something to build off of. But tonight's game is going to be difficult against San Francisco, a team that might be the second-best team in the conference. I would not have said that had BYU had their full collection of personnel.
Yep.
But San Francisco is really good, and they're efficient, and they've got the guard line to match up with Barcelo and T. John Lucas. So that's going to be, you know, an interesting matchup. We'll talk more about it in hour number three. But we got to take a break, though. On the other side, we'll talk more about, you know, BYU and Gonzaga. Should the Cougars schedule the Zags in the future? We heard from Mark Few about that. We'll play that clip coming up next. It's Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSL Sports. Welcome back in Cougar Sports Saturday here on KSL News Radio, and it's always powered by KSLSports.com. Make sure to download the KSL Sports app presented by University Federal Credit Union. All our BYU stories that we type up on KSLSports.com are available on the app. Again, we're talking some BYU hoops as the Cougars get ready to take on San Francisco tonight. Get that nap in, 9 p.m. tip, 8 p.m. pregame. It's another late one for BYU and the Dons on the Hilltop. But, you know, on Thursday night, the Cougs lost to Gonzaga, and it was the penultimate visit as WCC foes in the kennel. And, you know, it gets us wondering, Matt, you know, should BYU schedule Gonzaga in the future? Well, Gonzaga head coach Mark Few, he had his thoughts.
Yeah, yes, sure. I mean, it's been great. It's been, you know, they're a great, worthy opponent. Obviously, the atmospheres are terrific, whether they're in the kennel or down at the Marriott Center.
That's Mark Few, and he goes on to say, yeah, he wants to keep playing BYU, and he's pretty sure that they'll figure it out. And I'm with Mark Few. I think this game should be played. Here's the thing about college basketball. It's okay to schedule a crazy hard non-conference schedule because more times than not, even if you go 500, but then you do well in league play, you're going to be looked highly upon for playing that type of schedule rather than going 14-2 or 15-1 and playing one or two good teams. So I know that the Big 12 schedule is going to be daunting and it's going to be crazy. And night in and night out, you're likely playing tournament-level teams, very few breaks, but I would still throw in the local teams, Gonzaga, maybe St. Mary's even, because I think those games will still hold a lot of value for your resume.
Yeah, the end of the Few's quote was, I'm quite certain we'll have something going on in the future. So I think that Mark Pope would definitely like to keep something going with Gonzaga from a regional perspective, too. I think that's something that BYU has to be kind of cautious of in both football and men's basketball, is that you still want to have that regional presence out west. There's such a strong presence of Cougar fans, alums, boosters out on the West Coast. You don't want to completely abandon them because Middle America will, you know, Texas and all the plains, they'll benefit all the Cougar fans that are planted there. But you don't want to forget your West Coast BYU fans out there. So if you can get trips, whether it be to Washington or somewhere in California, maybe, you know, St. Mary's occasionally. I don't know if I want to go to McEwen Pavilion anytime soon when BYU's in the Big 12, but Gonzaga is a powerhouse. And I think, honestly, too, it might be able to take on a greater significance in the national college basketball landscape when you're talking Gonzaga, the, you know, national power against a Big 12 BYU. Agreed. In a home-and-home series. It might have more juice from a non-conference perspective.
It should be home and home every year between those teams. And no neutral, please. Like, can this please be in the Kennel and please be in the Marriott Center? I don't want no neutral sites with these guys.
Gonzaga would probably like that, though. I didn't realize until today. Today's their first road game, Gonzaga, of the season. They only play neutral site games anymore. Like, they have not had – they are the last team in college basketball.
No one wants to go there.
Well, they're the last team to go and play a true road game. So,
and they've played great teams. They played Duke and other good teams, but those teams won't return the visit to Spokane. So I think it makes a lot of sense for these two teams to keep playing each other. And one thing I love about this series, too, is there's just a healthy respect between the coaches. It may not always be that way with the fans, but it is certainly that way with the coaches. I really like that.
I've met Gonzaga fans a few times, and they are a pretty passionate group, I must say. They love their Gonzaga hoops. They've made the trek here to Salt Lake before. Well, we got to take a break. On the other side, we'll talk some BYU football. Way too early look at 2022. It's Cougar Sports Saturday. Powered
Sports Saturday is proudly brought to you by SRE.com. This is Cougar Sports Saturday. Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for three. Cougars by 20.
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans.
For Cougar fans.
It's Cougar Sports Saturday.
Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte.
On your legacy home of BYU Sports.
Yeah, I'll get him out.
KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Yeah, we're rolling along. Hour number one here at Cougar Sports Saturday. KSL News Time, 12:35 p.m. And we got to get out to the phone line. Welcome in our first guest of the day. And excited to have this guy on the line. He's been a mainstay in radio here in Salt Lake for many years now. He's the host of Hans and Scotty G on the Zone Sports Network, 97.5 and 1280 weekdays from noon to 3. He's the great Hans Olsen, former BYU lineman. Hans, how you doing, man?
Doing great, Mitch. Doing great, Matt. Thanks for having me on, guys. I'm excited to be on with you today.
Yeah, excited to talk some BYU football with you. It's never too early to talk some Cougar football. And, you know, there was some interesting kind of speculation today. ESPN's Adam Rittenberg tossed out Ed Lamb as a potential candidate for the Hawaii job. And let me just ask you, do you think there could be any potential change to this coaching staff, you think, as this coaching carousel continues to move?
I always leave it as a potential, especially with Ed Lamb. I leave it as a potential with talent like Ed Lamb and Aaron Roderick, and there's always going to be teams that are going to come in and attempt to poach. And BYU's got to do a really good job of shutting the doors. And I will tell you that there were a couple of Utah coaches in this offseason that teams approached, offered big contracts, and Utah shut the door on it, and they were able to keep them. And I'm hoping BYU can kind of learn that same lesson, that coaching pool is important. The coaches that they have there are important. Ed Lamb is critical to what Kalani Sitake does. I want everybody out there to understand that Ed Lamb has been Kalani Sitake's right-hand man since day one, and he does a lot more than just recruiting and a little bit of scheming. There is a lot of work that goes into what he does to help Kalani be the successful head coach he is. So he's very much a candidate. I know that he's been a candidate for other opportunities, and I'm just hoping BYU does a good job of shutting the door and keeping these brilliant minds where they belong.
Yeah, I got to think, too, Hans, that the new unprecedented deal that Kalani got, it's supposed to have a ripple effect on the assistants, too. Does that give you reason for optimism for BYU to potentially lock it down?
Well, if I know Kalani like I know Kalani, and, you know, we were seniors together, we were best friends through college, we've remained very close, and if I know Kalani like I know Kalani, sure, he got his, but he made sure that his guys got theirs, and that is always been his calling card. even when he was our teammate, he made sure that we were okay before he was okay. It's in his DNA. It's the Satake DNA. It actually comes from their dad. I don't know if you've met their dad, but he is a one of a kind. Papa Satake is like another pops to me. And Kalani has been raised to take care of the people around him. So my guess is, as unprecedented as his contract is, I think that the assistant pool should be as unprecedented.
We're joined by Hans Olsen here on Cougar Sports Saturday. Hans, BYU back-to-back 10-win seasons. Looks like program is trending upwards. What do you think that next step is for BYU football?
Well, it's to get ready. It's to prepare themselves to jump into the Big 12. And you look at Cincinnati that was in that 14 playoff, and you look at the structure of the Big 12 without Texas and Oklahoma, it still has plenty of strength. BYU got a taste of what Baylor's capable of in any given year. So my perspective is, fine, wins, losses in 22, whatever, you know, you can watch it and you can care about it. What I care about is building the depth and momentum going into Big 12. So 2022 is all about seeing what they're able to do in advance to recruiting, who they're able to nail down as head coach, or sorry, as assistant coaches, what they're able to do with transfer portal, the depth they're able to build. And if they're able to keep that momentum, you know, the paid scholarship for walk-ons with the Built Bar contract was brilliant, and that should help recruiting. So guys, building depth is going to be big in 2022, getting ready for the entrance into the Big 12 in 2023. That's what I'm watching. I'm not really caught up in, you know, 10, 11 wins or what they're able to do next year in the win-loss category, because college football playoffs is going to keep them locked out no matter what.
Yeah.
They do not want them to be a part of it. So New Year's Six, I guess if you want to set a standard, like, that would be great. Like, that's the peak. Get a New Year's Six bowl. But for me, it's watching the excitement and momentum that they have built. And let me tell you guys, Mitch, you mentioned it as I was coming in on this. That was my 16th football season I've covered on air. And I don't know if I've seen BYU football with more momentum. With the Big 12 announcement, the Kalani Sitake extension, the back-to-back 10 wins, all the things, landing big recruits, bringing in the Nakuas. You know, I get a sense for what other fan bases are feeling and what they're talking about. I've never seen the other fan bases more stirred up. I've never seen the momentum grab like it was. And it was exciting to see. And that's what we need to see through 2022. And wins and losses, I think, to me, that's just icing on a cake before you move into the Big 12.
Yeah, that's a great point, because, you know, BYU's golden era was the 80s. But I feel like the momentum in BYU athletics right now as a whole, there's just so much for Cougar fans to get excited about in the future. But you noted...
Oh, it's awesome.
You noted the depth, Hans. What side of the ball do you feel has the bigger, you know, workload to improve that depth? Is it offense or is it defense?
Get me some defensive linemen in here now.
Yeah.
I want defensive linemen that can rush a passer. And Scotty and I were going over this on the show, because I was talking about coming on with you guys today. And I was talking with him what, you know, kind of what I was projecting for 2022. And what I want is pass rushing defensive linemen. The Henry Daly kid that's coming back off the mission, the brother of John Henry Daly, he's supposed to be a rusher. I don't care what they look like. I don't care what they built like. You know, over the years, I have seen a lot of different builds and a lot of different structures on great rush edges. And I don't care who it is. I just want some. And the other thing I harped on yesterday, I'm so sick of people talking about Ituiaki's incapabilities. Ituiaki is as capable a defensive coordinator and defensive line coach as you're going to find in this country. And if you get too loud and too noisy, you're going to upset him too much, and somebody's going to come grab him. You got to remember, this guy coached that University of Utah defense to, it was either number one or number two. They had 50-some-odd sacks back in, like, 2014. 50-something sacks. I know this guy can – I know he can coach sacks. I know that he can recruit speed off the edge. I know that he can build a scheme between he and Kalani. They can build a scheme to get after quarterbacks. And my vision of going into the Big 12 with a lot of power play, you need depth and you need pass rushers. And I'm talking about one-on-one pass rushers. And that's what I want to see BYU go after. You know, Tyler Batty led the team in sacks at 3.5 this year. He led the team in sacks last year at 4. The year before that, Diane Lake, the safety, led the team in sacks with 2.5. You know, you go back to what Itu Iaki did with Nate Orchard at the University of Utah. Nate Orchard had 20-something, 22, 23. The same year, Hunter Dimmick had like 19. That was your bookends. And you know what that does to offenses? When you got bookends that collapse like that, I'm never worried about who BYU is going to have push in the middle. You know, whether it's Kyrus Tonga or otherwise. You know, Gabe Summers did a fantastic job of pressing middle. Nasa Mahe did a fantastic job. I'm never worried about the middles. Get me edge rushers and get them in depth. And that's I'm sorry to kind of get pumped up about it, but I want good rushing edges for BYU's defense going into 2023.
Yeah, that's a great point. Hans Olsen's our guest here on Cougar Sports Saturday. Who do you think the best returning player is for BYU in 2022? Now that I think we can all agree that Algier was the best player for BYU last year, but
yeah.
who's the best returning player coming back?
It truly is a race between Blake Freeland and Clark Barrington. It really is. I mean, I know you got a bunch of idiots out there that love to dismiss it. And it always bugs me. People think it's funny to dismiss offensive linemen. I think it's ignorant, and I think it's ridiculous. And I think Clark Barrington and Blake Freeland both have opportunities to be very nice draft picks for BYU, which would build off of the first offensive lineman they had drafted since going back to whatever it was, like 2005 or something, before last year. So those are going to be your two best players, I think, on the entire field. As far as ceiling, it would be Blake Freeland. As far as right now and what it would be in the mix, it's Clark Barrington. But it's not a bad thing to have those two up front kind of anchoring things. And then you'd go to Jaren Hall. And, you know, I think that Jaren Hall is going to be a spectacular quarterback. And I put a lot of a weight on his shoulders to carry. But I do not want anybody to overlook what you've got at offensive line. And I also want to say Coach Funk did a phenomenal job. Absolutely phenomenal job. I actually think he's a better offensive line coach than Mateos. I don't think he's as good an offensive mind as Jeff Grimes, but I think he is a better offensive line coach than Mateos. And I thought we saw that offensive line take a really nice step after 2 or 3 weeks in that season in continuity. And I love his schemes. I love all his back sets. I like all the just base techniques of how he takes on spins, how he takes on bulls. He's got a really great base. Again, Jeff Grimes is one of my favorite offensive line minds in the country, but I was really impressed with what Coach Funk did in his first year.
Hans, when you say Blake Freeland, I agree with you. I think he could potentially be, the ceiling could be a first day NFL pick because of the premium there is on offensive tackles. But let me ask you, do you think with Kingsley Suamataia from Oregon, the 5-star offensive lineman coming in, does he go to right tackle, or does Blake Freeland maybe go to that right tackle spot, or do you keep Blake at left tackle?
Well, I would personally, I'd keep Blake where he is. I'd keep him at the left. And I'd put Kingsley at the right.
Yeah.
And I've got a lot of expectation for Kingsley, but, you know, I'm always hesitant when I see guys move around. And, you know, it always makes me wonder, so I'm always patient and cautious, and we'll let him do his work. We all know what he did in high school. And it was special. And I know that kid personally. And he is way beyond football kind of special. One of the most kind-hearted, gentle souls that you'll ever meet, but just a giant that is just filled with rage on a football field. He's exactly what you want from a big tackle. But I'd leave Freeland at left, and I would put Kingsley at right. And then if I felt like at any point I'm getting some type of better set or some type of better protection or something works better with my scheme with the reverse of that, then I switch it. But as for right now, I'd go Blake at left.
You can follow him on Twitter at 97.5Hans. Weekdays on the Zone Sports Network, noon to 3. Hans and Scotty G. It's Hans Olsen. Hans, appreciate you hopping on. We'll have to do this again soon throughout the offseason and next football season as well. Always appreciate talking football with you.
Love doing it. Go Cougars. Love seeing these guys win. Love seeing them succeed. Love Kalani Sitake. Love this football program. And, people always feel like I'm overly critical. I hope people understand I'm critical because I want the best for the program. I want wins. Yep. I want that program to be front and center. I am not worried about women's track and basketball. I'm not worried about men's gymnastics or wrestling. I'm not worried about that stuff. It's football.
Yep, football drives it all.
I hope BYU focuses on it, puts all their money into it, makes it as great as it can be. And I will tell you, it is on that path. Just keep it going on that path.
It's former BYU lineman and current radio host with the Zone Sports Network, Hans Olsen. Hans, again, appreciate it. And we got to get to a break here on Cougar Sports Saturday. Been a great time talking some BYU football. We'll get some more football talk next. Cougar Sports Saturday here on KSL News Radio by KSL Sports.
Great stuff from Hans Olsen just a moment ago. We'll put the interview up on the podcast feed, but man, just, you know, if you've been living under a rock in sports radio, KSL Sports and The Zone coming together, just some great content, great shows all across the Wasatch Front. So I love having access to Hans Olsen, former BYU player, well-connected media member. Good stuff. We talked about a story that's new in its development, and that being, I think it was yesterday, late last night, Hawaii's head football coach Todd Graham resigned. That had become a mess. People were leaving Hawaii left and right. There were accusations of player mistreatment, and it got to the point where Coach Graham decided to step away. So now there is a vacancy at the University of Hawaii, and there's a couple names jumping out that have connections to BYU.
Yeah, Ed Lamb is the one that has the strongest ties to BYU because he's currently on the staff, the associate head coach. His name's been tossed around as a potential candidate. According to ESPN, Lamb was the runner-up in the coaching search for Hawaii 2 years ago when the Rainbow Warriors were replacing Nick Rolovich, and they ultimately hired Todd Graham, who basically resigned because of the treatment of players. Yep. There was a lot of former players that spoke to a Senate in Hawaii and basically expressed concern for the future of the program.
I think his own son transferred.
He went to the transfer portal. Yeah, his own son, like, sound the alarm. Like, there is a problem when the son of the head coach gets into the portal. Like, come on. But so now there's an opening, and this will be the 29th head coach change this offseason, and it's one shy of the record in college football. 30 was the record back in 2013. But Ed Lamb's going to be a candidate, I would imagine. Maybe Elisa Tuiaki, who Hans spoke about moments ago. Robert Anai now is the offensive coordinator at Syracuse after Bronco Mendenhall abruptly announced
that makes a lot of sense.
Stepping down. Robert Anai could be a candidate,
especially with that
island
passing attack he showed in Virginia. That's, I think, when you think of Hawaii football, don't you think of that? Just slinging it around?
I do. And heck, if I was Hawaii talking about slinging it around, I'd maybe make some calls to Aaron Roderick. Roderick doesn't have the recruiting ties to Hawaii, whereas Ed Lamb, what makes him an appealing candidate is that he's got strong connections to Hawaii. He is BYU's number one recruiter on the islands. He speaks, I believe he speaks Tongan. I got to check that, but he speaks, I believe, Tongan. And so he has a strong connection with recruiting Polynesian athletes. There's a lot of history there for him. And he's also been a head coach at Southern Utah. He led them to success, where it's been a program that really hasn't had much success at all. He led them to two of their three playoff appearances during his 8 years leading the T-Birds. So Lamb's been at BYU since 2016. If he does, you know, maybe get another job, it would be interesting, though, Matt, to see what BYU does for a pool of candidates for an assistant if, you know, again, this, if there's an opening. Because the Big 12's coming up, you would imagine that a coaching pool would be deeper for BYU being in a Power 5 league, and there's also that caveat where you don't have to, you know, hire a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints to be an assistant. So it'd be interesting to see what BYU's pool would look like going into a P5 league, but ideally I think you probably want to maintain everyone on the staff, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I have mixed feelings about it because it's always a good thing from a point of leadership and a point of program building to have people be sought after, because it That's means true. That you're doing things well. You hear about this often in the business world, but you hire people with the desire that they leave. Like, you don't want them to stay forever, because if they are so good at their job, that is a positive reflection on you. So, but the the timing of it is mainly why I want to bring him back. I think I'm with Hans here. Just late in the game. I know the carousel's still churning, but it's late in the game. I think you want to keep this staff intact at least one more season to build up and ramp up for the Big 12.
Yeah, Lavelle had a great coaching tree back in his day. It would be interesting to see that start to build for Kalani Sitake. Taking a break, we'll talk more college football next here on Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com.
Sports Saturday is proudly brought to you by SRE.com. This is Cougar Sports Saturday. Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for three! Cougar Points winning!
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans.
For Cougar fans.
It's Cougar Sports Saturday.
Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte.
On your legacy home of BYU Sports.
KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Hour one in the books. Great stuff. We had Hans Olsen on. You can check that out on our podcast feed. He had some good takes. We talked a lot about the future of BYU football, and it's well worth a listen. BYU basketball plays a little later tonight. We touched on that as well, but BYU in San Francisco tonight, 9 p.m. right now. We want to stick with football, though. We asked on our KSL Sports Twitter page our Cougar Sports Saturday poll of the week. So this past week, Georgia wins the national championship, and that was awesome. I'm glad that game panned out the way it did, Mitch, just because it reminded me why I love college football so much. Anything can happen, and the storyline with Stetson Bennett, seeing him in tears as Georgia was taken back to pick six to ice the game, and his story is really an unbelievable one of being a walk-on, sharing a locker, going the JUCO route, coming back, was the starter. Then they bring in transfers, and then he gets relinquished to the bench but fights his way back up. It reminded me that I love college football, and then shortly after, you helped put out a piece on KSLSports.com as KSL Sports is getting into the way too early top 25.
Yes.
So we're asking you guys, the fans, should BYU football be ranked in the preseason poll? Mitch, do you believe BYU football should be ranked?
Yes, I think they should. I had BYU at number 23 in my preseason way too early ballot.
That's a little low.
It is a little bit low, maybe compared to what a lot of people would think, but my concerns still are on the defensive side. You heard it from Hans. The defensive line position is an area that needs to improve. I think the personnel, BYU starting 11 next year, I think will be really good. When you get Peyton Wilgar back, who just recently had a second surgery, Keenan Peely comes back, Chaz Ayu comes back, there's going to be a lot of personnel, I think that starting 11 is going to be really good. Tyler Batty comes back. Earl Tuioti Mariner might be the most underrated interior defensive lineman BYU has, but I just still have questions up front. Can they get to the quarterback? Even Hans has that question. I have that question. It's just defensively, there's so many questions, I think, scheme-wise for BYU in 2022, and I also think their schedule's a lot harder, too. Even though you only play five P5s, I think that it's a tougher slate. So, but I think that BYU warrants being in the preseason top 25 just on the sole fact that back-to-back 10-win seasons. That is enough to me to say they should be in the preseason top 25. What about you?
I had them 20 in that KSL Sports poll on my ballot, and now that I'm thinking about it, because right now 64% of you think they should be between 16 and 25, so on that back half of the top 25, I'm rethinking my own ballot. I actually think BYU should come in at 15, partly because of what they've done in the past, back-to-back 10-win seasons. But you mentioned all the players coming back, and then you got the continuity of the staff. I feel like if BYU had beaten UAB and they had an 11-win season, then I think a lot of people would have them at 15. And maybe that UAB game is holding them back a little bit, but there's too much talent coming back. And I had a hard time filling out this poll because there's just so many moving pieces. It's really quite ridiculous that we're even having this conversation and that this poll exists, because it can really hurt a team if they don't get the love that they deserve. But offensively, you lose Algier, but you have so many running backs in the stable. Jaren Hall was great. The wide receivers are good. You're bringing back tight ends. Mason Wake, Isaac Rex, the offensive line is loaded. And defensively, they weren't great in 2021, but there's so many people coming. I just feel like there's so many people coming back. The punter's coming back. The kicker's coming back. Everyone's coming back. I just feel like because of the 10-win seasons and so many starting experience, maybe they belong to be top 50. I think they do.
BYU checked in at number 18 on the KSL Sports Way Too Early Top 25. So that was a grouping of myself, you, and a bunch of other individuals who voted on the poll on our KSL Sports team that also included the Zone Sports Network individuals. So BYU checks in at number 18, which I think, okay, you can make that argument for it. I mean, they could, you know, BYU, it deserves at a minimum to be ranked next year in the AP Top 25 poll going into the season. And, you know, I think that BYU is, because of their back-to-back 10-win seasons, they deserve that chance to be a preseason-ranked team. They haven't had that since 2009. That was the year when BYU was going in, or actually, yeah, it was 2009 when they were coming in, getting ready to play Oklahoma off the heels of three straight 10-win seasons. So I think BYU deserves to be ranked. I think Kalani Sitake has built up a program that's gaining a little bit of attention nationally. I think they that loss to UAB, you're right, I think did derail a little bit more of the momentum. But I honestly look at that loss in retrospect and think it might be a good thing because now this team's going to probably work harder. They're not going to just kind of sit back and feel good about themselves. Oh, 11 wins, we're on top of the world. Because that game, I don't think they were mentally in it. I don't think they respected the game in that one. I thought the effort was subpar, so they probably deserved that loss.
Oh, they totally deserved
the
loss.
They did. And now they come into the offseason ready to they can't be a soft football team. You know, BYU in certain games against Utah, Arizona State, they weren't soft. They played physical, the brand that Kalani Sitake wants to see. But I thought there was too many times when the injuries started to pile up where BYU was playing soft. And that's going to be the challenge for them this year against a schedule that, again, I feel could be really good. You think about some of the teams that BYU will face, they check in, many of these teams check in on the KSL Sports Way Too Early Top 25. Notre Dame, who's going to be playing BYU in Vegas, they check in at number 8. Utah's not on the schedule in 2022. They opted to play Florida instead. Baylor, that's going to be the home opener. They check in at number 12. Arkansas, number 14. So a lot of good teams on that BYU will face this year. Could be preseason top 25 teams as well.
It's a great schedule. And one thing that does interest me about this upcoming 2022 season is I think there's a real possibility with everyone you're bringing back. It's not inconceivable that you can make a run in a New Year's Six game. Because I think all it takes is an 11-1 season on the heels of back-to-back 10-win seasons. And look, maybe
you think 11-1 is possible with the schedule, though?
Yeah, I do. It's difficult, but look, Notre Dame's taking a step back, straight up. I know that they're bringing back most of their coaching staff, but they're going to have to break in a new quarterback, a new running back. It's just not going to be. It's not a game where you look at it and say it's crazy. Oregon too is a team where before last season you thought, wow, that's going to be tough going to Oregon's going to be. Well, they have a whole new staff. Their offense was a mess last year, a complete and utter mess. I think, and you get them fairly early. I think it's going to take Oregon a little while to regain their footing with a new coach. So I think Oregon's winnable. The game that I think is the least winnable is Arkansas, but that's at home.
Yeah.
So, and Baylor's at home. Baylor's really good too. Don't get me wrong.
They lose a lot though. Abram Smith, running back, number 7, he's gone.
Yeah. He ran all over BYU. He's gone. So, and that's at home too. So, and I think BYU, look, in that game against Baylor, BYU hung around for a little bit and then it got away from them. They were banged up. Baylor was significantly healthier. You get them week two. So barring just a rash of bad luck in fall camp and in the opening game, you're going to be healthy for Baylor. So that's a really good sign. So, yeah, you can actually spin that schedule. Stanford's no good. They're no good, but it's still a Power 5 label. So you get a little spice at the end of the season, a good balance, Boise State in November as well. It's a road game too, so you get two road games in November against good quality football teams. 11-1 to put a cap to independent football would be phenomenal. You talk about the momentum needed to go into the Big 12. This is a great year to do that, and it's certainly possible.
I think what worries me with the schedule in 2022 is that you play 9 consecutive games against teams that played in bowls in 2021, or at least qualified for bowl games. Some of the games got canceled. But that 9 bowl eligible teams, that's the highest in the independence era. And the two other FBS teams, week one, USF, which I think is going to be a sneaky game. I've been high on USF in 2022. I think they got Jeff Scott, who they gave a contract extension to. USF with that quarterback McClain, they will be a tough out for BYU. And then Stanford to cap off the season on Thanksgiving weekend, that's going to probably be a completely different team. Even though I'm not high on Stanford, I think that is a program that probably should have David Shaw in the hot seat. It's crazy to me that man's making $8 million a year, and that was the results they put out last season, 3 wins. I know that Tanner McKee, a former BYU recruit, kid that served a mission, he's a good prospect at QB, but I mean, it's just a really difficult schedule. And BYU, I have some questions about the depth defensively, because if you just get one injury, like that, we know now, if Keenan Peely goes down, if one key piece, like a Peyton Wilgar, goes down, the whole dynamic of the defense is just shot. And it's just, that's a problematic deal, and we haven't seen the defensive line able to create enough pressure consistently to make me think that this is going to, like, Oregon can line up Bo Nix, the former Auburn quarterback, who I don't think is that good, but he might have all the time in the world to drop back and just straight deal. Again, well, that's my worry, I think, for BYU.
It's a fair worry, but on the flip side, I think BYU offense has a chance to be top 10 next year. So last year, it took a while for that thing to get going. Once it got going, they shot up the offensive rankings, but it wasn't like they were a top 10 offense all year long. I think they can return to that, which will help the defense. And then you talk about that meaty schedule with no breaks. Well, there's not as many Power 5 teams, and that's no disrespect to USF or to Wyoming, but I think there's some opportunities in the middle there, Liberty and East Carolina, where, yeah, you're still playing football, but if your offense is humming and you're playing well, maybe you can reach into the depth and save people a little bit, which they weren't able to do at all in 2021.
Oh, they reached into it. Georgia Southern, they reached into the depth, and it was kind of ugly that first quarter, man. You don't want to see reach into the depth.
I mean, from a year up, at, like, at USF, they had an opportunity to do that, and then they just stopped playing football, and USF came back into the game.
And that's my worry a little bit, too, with BYU, is that will they be a team that could just put the foot to the gas and just blow someone out? I don't know if it's in Aaron Roderick's mindset. He's a guy that he's willing to just take the 14-point win and, look, hey, just get the win. I'm not calling out. You got to just get the win any way you can. But BYU in 2021, they didn't really blow out anyone. Like Georgia Southern,
no,
USC, no one. They didn't blow out anyone. I mean, it was hard to just completely pull away from teams. And I think that this schedule, there's just going to be a lot of tough games. Like Wyoming.
Wyoming, half their team is gone. They went into the portal.
That might be the easiest game. But Utah State's going to be tough. They got a transfer from Alabama at wide receiver.
Wyoming's quarterback.
it's pretty crazy. And he was impressive in their bowl game. So I just think that this schedule will be difficult. I look at it right now and would say 9-3. Anything more than that might be.
Where are your losses early?
I would say the losses would be Baylor, Notre Dame, and Arkansas. That would be the losses to me. Maybe Boise State too. But I think Boise State's
8-4.
I think Boise State's trending down. I think the best days of Boise football are long gone, in my opinion.
We'll take the break here in Cougar Sports Saturday. Hey, look, it's January 15th, so we're gonna have a long time to talk about this schedule and prognosticate about what is going to happen in the fall.
7.5 months. We're not that far. Just around the corner. I can map it out. We could break it down. Spring football, March.
Oh, jeez.
Preseason magazines, media day. It'll be here before we know it.
We'll take the break on the other side. There's a quarterback from sunny Los Angeles in the transfer portal. We'll get the latest on him and if BYU's in the mix for a former Utah high school.
Sports Saturday is proudly brought to you by SRE.com. This is Cougar Sports Saturday. Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for three. Cougars by 20.
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans.
For Cougar fans.
Cougar Sports Saturday.
Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte.
On your legacy home of BYU Sports. KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
It has been a long, long time coming here on Cougar Sports Saturday, but we need to get the competitive juices flowing once again and for the first time in the calendar year of 2022.
Cougar Sports Saturday Top 5. Mitch and Matt clash in a weekly battle of BYU sports knowledge. The Cougar Sports Saturday Top 5.
Let's go! It's back! And it's brought to you by Economic Partners, Utah's premier business valuation and strategic consulting firm. If you need a business valuation, contact econpartners.com. They're run by diehard BYU fans. They're winners at econpartners.com. Proud sponsor of Cougar Sports Saturday and the Top 5.
And if this is your new year, new you, first time listening to the show, Top 5, of course, we bring in our producer, Dallin Graff, the maestro of the Top 5, to play a little bit of it. It's like a game show where we guess the Top 5 on Dallin's list. And Dallin, what's the topic of your list today?
Well, I'm very excited to be back. It has been far too long.
Yeah.
And, the competitive juices, we need a little bit of that on the show. So, you know, last year, a lot of the offseason and a lot of the top fives that I did were based around the running back position, right? We had Tyler Allgeier coming off the big season, anticipated that he would have a big year in 2021, and he did. I'm going to tell you guys, though, in 2022, I believe it is the year of the wide receiver.
Oh, okay.
I believe we're going to see some big seasons from the likes of Puka Nacua, who had a fantastic year last year, 800 receiving yards for Puka, and the return of Gunnar Romney, who announced that he would be returning to school for a fifth year. Romney has a chance to put himself atop some of the, or at least in the conversation of some of these lists of all-time receivers at BYU. So today what we're focused on is the top five in career receptions at BYU. Currently, Gunnar Romney, 117 career receptions at BYU, but a return next year and a big season, he could see himself in the top 10 and potentially even the top five. So that is what it is today, top five in career receptions. It includes all players, wide receivers, tight ends. There's no position specific there, and you just got to give me the name. So that is it, pretty easy, and we will start with Matt.
Well, I'm going to start with Cody Hoffman. I'll just get out of the way right now.
Yes, so. A great guess because he is number one, and not by a small margin, mind you. 260 career receptions for Cody Hoffman. That biggest season, obviously, 2012, where he had 100 receptions, 1,200 receiving yards. But he had, in all four of his seasons, at least 40 receptions all 4 years. So obviously consistent throughout his career, but that big junior season for him really puts him over the top.
It's unbelievable that he's number one. And look, we love Riley Nelson on the program. Love him to death. But that was a weak era of BYU quarterback play. And for Cody Hoffman to do what he did with Jake Heaps was in there, Riley Nelson. I mean, there were so many. He got passes from, six or seven different quarterbacks? James Lark. He had a career day with James Lark down in New Mexico. It was, incredible that he did that. And it wasn't – typically when you have someone shoot up the stats, it's like a pairing where they're a great quarterback and a great wide receiver. But he did it with a bunch of different guys. So impressive for Cody Hoffman.
Absolutely. All right. Next guess is yours, Mitch.
I'm going to go with Dennis Pitta.
Yes, there we go. Number two on the list here, Dennis Pitta. He's 39 receptions behind Cody Hoffman. So that just goes to show the lead there. 221 career receptions for Dennis Pitta. His biggest season, 2008, where he had 83 receptions, over 1,000 receiving yards there. But again, another guy who all 4 years was consistent. Those last 3 years in particular, all over 800 receiving yards, all about 60 receptions or more. So that's going to get you up the list. And a guy who did benefit from top-tier quarterback play at BYU.
He definitely did. And you mentioned coming in that, you know, a lot of the talk for 2021 was the running back, Tyler Allgeier, former PWO, preferred walk-on. That was Dennis Pitta, too, preferred walking. Think about all these, great players in BYU history. Allgeier, preferred walk-on. Cody Hoffman only had an offer from Sacramento State. Dennis Pitta, preferred walk-on. It's kind of crazy that some of the BYU greats, just they are not this decorated recruits, which sometimes pains me because I'm all about the star life. However, BYU is a place that they get guys that they buy into BYU and the foundation of the school and the program can create some great success for these guys.
Yeah, that's a great point, Mitch. All right, we're tied up. Back to you, Matt. Where do you want to go?
I'm not feeling great about this one because he left early. But when I was given that spiel about wide receiver quarterback combinations, the guy that came to mind was Austin Colley. Okay, great.
Yes, Austin Colley. He's third on the list. 215 career receptions for Austin Colley. Obviously, that big year, his junior season that led him to head to the NFL. 106 receptions that year, over 1,500 receiving yards. I mean, that's probably the best receiving season anyone's had at BYU. But those previous 3 years, the one before the mission in 2004, 53 receptions, and then 2007, 56 receptions. So he was a guy who only three seasons, but he was really consistent as he kind of grew into his role and then obviously exploded for that final year at BYU.
And I love the way that they used Austin Colley too, which I'm maybe projecting here a little bit with Puka and Gunner, but Colley played every position and ran every route. And he was never pigeonholed into the deep threat or the slot guy. He just was everywhere. And I think Puka and Gunner are a lot like Austin Colley in the sense that they can run all the routes. They can do all the things. We've already seen that a little bit with Puka, where he's doing jet sweeps and different things. But I really hope that Aaron Roderick, Fessy Satake, they'll use these guys like Austin Colley was used. Because when you put people all over the field in different areas, it's very hard to defend, and that's what allows guys to have great seasons like Colley did back in 2008.
It was a total shame that Colley was not the Mountain West Player of the Year that year. I think yes. It was Brian Johnson. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, I know Utah went undefeated, but Colley was the nation's best receiver. How he didn't even win the Biletnikoff. It was like, that guy was so good. We agree that he's the best receiver in BYU history, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Like, Colley was the man. He was a favorite of Peyton Manning, the sheriff. He was a favorite of Bill Belichick, I think, signed him a couple times. Like, yep. Colley was awesome.
All right, we are 3 for 3 so far. Let's see if we can keep it going. The guess is yours, Mitch.
This guy has burned me a few times in these wide receiver lists. Matt knows where I'm going.
Yep.
He shares my name, Mitch Matthews.
He
gets you this time, and it's a good guess because he did have 73 receptions in 2014.
Oh,
that's eighth all time in single season receptions. But no, he's not even top 10 career receptions.
I literally texted him. I said, "Hey, send me your good luck baseball jersey you always wear at those BYU football games. I'm picking your name, man. I'm picking you." Nope, it doesn't come through. Are you kidding me, Mitch?
The tough break for Mitch Harper, and we go back to Matt. A chance to seal it all here with the win.
I really want this one, but the list is getting difficult now. I'm going to try Andy Boyce.
Another good guess. Had a big single season in 1990, 79 receptions, but doesn't crack the top 10.
Let's go with Eric Drage.
Clay Brown.
Okay. So again, we're guessing the top 5 receptions all time.
Yes, top 5 career receptions.
We've got 3 already. We're guessing the remaining 2 here on the top 5. Brought to you by Economic Partners. Let's see here. I'm trying to think of this. This is a little bit tricky. How about, gosh, I'm trying to think. K.O. Louis.
Love the guess, though. Love the guess.
Man,
KO punch.
Okay, this guy was here for a little bit. He was a favorite target of John Beck. Let's try Johnny Harleen.
That was a good guess. I thought you got it there.
Both the final remaining names, give you a little hint here. They're both pre-2000.
Okay. Let's go with Chris Smith.
How about Todd Christensen?
He was a fullback at BYU. He was more in the ground attack. Hopefully the Raiders silver and black win one for Todd today.
It's starting up here pretty quick. Yeah.
Raiders Bengals, let's go. Silver and black. I'm trying to think here. Let's go with Glenn Kozlowski.
Pre-2000s.
Yes.
That throws a wrinkle into it. Let's go with, I'm blanking here. Let's try Jamal Willis.
Not bad. I mean, he was a guy that would catch some passes out of the backfield. All right. Here, let's start to zero in here. I'm trying to think.
Oh, my goodness.
Give you a little hint.
Hey, hold on. I got one. I'm going to go with Phil Odell.
And that's a great guess, Mitch, because he is sixth He just misses out there. Phil Odell, 1965 to 1967. That's a deep cut. So you get a you get a little credit
half
for that one.
Half a point, maybe?
It's still wrong, but you get a little credit here. We got two left. I'll give you a little hint here. There is a receiver from the Ty Detmer era on this list. So think about that. Heisman winner, big seasons there.
Okay,
the
I got one. Matt Bellini. Let's go!
And there we go. Matt gets the win.
Woo-hoo!
With the Matt. Oh, my goodness. Matt Bellini.
Mitch burned me. Matt delivers for him.
Yes, there you go. Matt Bellini.
Unbelievable.
204 career receptions.
Marcus is better.
For Matt Bellini.
Marcus is better.
And all four seasons, consistent. 51 receptions, 51 receptions, 43, 59. So this wasn't a guy who had any you know big season that really put him over the top. It was just 4 years of consistent play. Obviously benefited from fantastic quarterback play there with Ty Detmer. Any other shots at that last name? We want to take any guesses.
I feel like there's a tight. Is it a tight end?
It is not a tight end. Okay, he's a wide receiver.
Well, let me say this. Matt Bellini, Kalani's referenced him as like Lopini Katoa, who's coming back in the running back room for his sixth year. He's kind of compared him a little bit to a Matt Bellini because Katoa has had some phenomenal grabs out of in the receiving game, out of the backfield.
Yeah.
So Matt Bellini delivers. Another guess I would take, maybe Golden Richards.
I got nothing.
Nothing. All right, we're talking about number five here.
Margin Hooks.
Oh,
wow, sky's the limit.
Margin Hooks. That's a tough one, guys. I'm not gonna lie.
It's
tough, you know. But 189 career receptions for Margin Hooks, played from 1997 to the year his final season 2000.
I'm not gonna lie. Margin Hooks might be one of the more underappreciated BYU receivers. Him. Mitch
he
Matthews. Like,
we just.
I know. Margin Hooks.
Yeah, you call him slept on. You forgot about
it. It's so crazy to me. I don't know why. But it's kind of aligned with, you know, what Matt was talking about with Cody Hoffman's time. Margin Hooks played in that stretch where the quarterback play wasn't great. Like, Federick was good, Kevin Federick.
Right.
He was okay. Drew Miller was in there for a spot. He was like a top recruit. But, Margin Hooks, those bib jerseys. Man, all the memories are flooding back now. I'm sorry. Sky's the limit, Margin Hooks.
Mitch is going to be watching Margin Hook highlights after the show today, just thinking, man, where did I go wrong?
I'm going to apologize to him. I am. I'm going to say, I'm sorry, Margin. I feel bad.
I can't believe we didn't think of Bellini sooner. In my brain, as we wrap this up, and the top five is brought to you by Economic Partners, Utah's premier business valuation and strategic consulting firm. If you need a business valuation, contact econpartners.com. I just felt like Ty Detmer spread the football around so much that there wasn't someone that he just zeroed in on, and that guy shot up the
– yeah.
Well, obviously I was wrong with Matt Bellini.
Yeah, so. BYU back in the day, too, they always had the games where 7, 8, 9 receivers would catch passes. So
four
made
passes.
Made it a little bit tricky to figure out that top five. Good list, Alan. Good start to 2022.
Great start to 2022. Yeah, well,
I'm still a little bit mad at Mitch. Mitch Matthews. I saw him at a basketball game recently, too. And I wanted to say, Mitch, I completely disagree with your Big 12 take about, like, what was it? He said something about we need to create our own thing. Anyway, I'm getting off on a tangent. Mitch, I'm sorry. Love you still, but
Matt Bellini, I love you, baby. Let's keep winning in 2022. Back after this. Quarterback product. Back after this.
Cougar Sports Saturday is proudly brought to you by SRE.com. This is Cougar Sports Saturday. Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for three! Cougars by 20!
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans.
For Cougar fans.
It's Cougar Sports Saturday.
Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte.
On your legacy home of BYU Sports.
KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Welcome back into Cougar Sports Saturday. Been a great show up to this point. Hour number three underway. We want to start things off talking some BYU hoops. Later tonight, Greg Rubel brings the Connery, and our current guest, Mark Durant, brings the Cage from San Francisco. Underrated movie, Mark, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. You put Connery and Cage in anything, I'm going to watch that movie, that's for sure.
Yeah, me too. We need more of that in our life. So, hey, so, you know, I came away from that 26-point loss against Gonzaga actually feeling pretty good because I just felt like if Gonzaga plays that way, They're going to win an NCAA tournament. They beat some NBA teams. It's just the field goal percentage was ridiculous. So I feel like there's a world, and if Gonzaga comes back to earth, BYU could get them. How did you feel after that loss against Gonzaga on Thursday?
Well, I mean, I had some mixed emotions. The first half, I was right there. You know, I thought, listen, Gonzaga is just playing so good. Nobody's going to be able to hang with them. And I thought BYU played about as well as they could and were actually within shouting distance. So, you know, I didn't – that first half, I was actually – I thought it was just so fun to watch. I mean, that was high-quality, good college basketball right there. That was as good as it gets. And the second half, I felt like BYU at one point kind of threw in the towel a little bit, and it's understandable. I mean, you're playing against a good team and they're kind of running over you, but I thought defensively, I thought there was a real lack of effort. Maybe I think the game plan that they went in originally didn't work, and so that I think they're just trying to figure out what could work, and nothing was working, and it just – I just didn't see the defensive team that I've seen all year and who was just amazing at St. Mary's. And they seemed to just put up no resistance at all against Gonzaga. Now, granted, Gonzaga's awesome. We all understand that. But I don't care who you're playing. I want to see some effort. I want to see some real – I want it to hurt when you get scored on. And it was almost like a layup drill for Gonzaga for a while. With that said, offensively, I thought BYU over the course of the game performed well enough and looked pretty good. I thought Caleb Lohner really made some steps, which I think is very important for this team. I thought Alex was terrific and Tijon was pretty good. And so, I mean, they did a lot of good things. But defensively in that second half was a disappointment for me. But sometimes that happens in those games. It gets out of hand and you just kind of lose your focus and it's just hard to do what you typically can do. So this will be a big game tonight, obviously, to see how they bounce back against another high-powered offensive team who's playing really good this year. So this will be another good one, but I hope to see a little bit better defensive effort from BYU tonight.
Mark, what makes Caleb Lohner so important to BYU offensively, in your opinion?
Well, I think Alex needs some help. I mean, the teams that I think are very good have two kind of really good scores that you can count on for 30, 35 points a night. Those, you just have a consistency there. You rely on that. And then the rest of the team could kind of fill in. Some guys can, you know, have a good night one night, other good, but you need some really consistent top scoring. And Tijon maybe is that guy for Alex, but I think when you have two guys that are going to perform consistently for you, that's to me the formula for having a good, consistent team. And when Caleb's not contributing offensively, obviously he does a lot of good things, and we all understand that, but we know what he can do. And when he contributes offensively, for one, he spends a lot of time on the three-point line. And if he's not knocking down that three-point shot, that allows defenders to sag off him and help on Alex Barcella makes his life miserable. And so if Caleb Lohner can at least be a threat from the three-point line, that draws the defense out, opens up the driving lanes, clears out the middle for a guy like Foose. And if Caleb Lohner can be a dynamic offensive threat, that really can help the offense run better. Also, if Caleb's hitting that three, the big man has to come out on him. He's got a really nice ball-handling skills. He's got a great first step. We saw it a couple times against Gonzaga where he – was on the perimeter, put it on the floor, made some nice moves, and got to the rim. So I think the type of player Caleb is, he's kind of a three-man playing, he's playing out of position at the four and the five. He likes to be in space. He likes to have be able to face up at the basket and do things that way rather than he's not really a back-to-the-basket post-up guy. So if he feels comfortable in space, if he can hit that jumper consistently, That will give him the opportunity then to do other things which he likes to do, like a three-man, then it just makes him a better player, which then opens it up for other guys like Alex Barcella. I mean, right now, if I'm going to play against BYU, my only goal is to shut down Alex Barcella. Don't let him get hot. I'm going to commit all the resources I need to stop him. And what you need to do with teams that do that is punish them for doing it. One of the ways BYU can punish them, because they're going to likely leave off a guy like Caleb, is if Caleb can hit those shots, that punishes teams for trying to stop Alex and makes BYU a better team. So I think if Caleb and he doesn't have to do a lot. I mean, he just needs to be an offensive threat, maybe get 10, 12 points a game. If he can do that, that will really help BYU going forward in the conference.
That's a great point. Mark Durant's our guest here on Cougar Sports Saturday. I think we would all agree that Barcelo is far and away the best player on this basketball team, which makes me wonder who's the second best player on the team. What would you say to that, Mark?
Second best player on this team?
Yep.
Well, I think it's Tijon. I mean, Tijon is a really steady influence out there. He's a smooth operator, and he's got the ability to hit the three and then get in the paint and be effective. He's a good assist man. I think he's a very good player, and sometimes he loses a little bit his focus, but when he's dialed in, I mean, I've seen him in games. I go back to the Missouri State game. He single-handedly won that game for BYU and was really dialed in and hit some big shots. So I think he and Alex are a great tandem, and Foose is certainly emerging as one of the best players on this team. He just gets better and better. I'm so impressed with Fusini and his ability to rebound, offensive rebound. He doesn't seem to get rattled. He plays with a lot of poise. He doesn't turn the ball over. He's playing with a lot of patience. So I think he's on the upward trend to be one of the best players on this team. A guy like Tijon brings a lot to this team and settles them down and makes other guys better. So I would say Tijon, that's a pretty good backcourt the BYU has in Alex and Tijon, and they're going to need it tonight because they're going to play another really terrific backcourt with the Dons, with the Shabazz and Bouye. I mean, they're really, really good. So that'll be a great matchup to see those guard lines play each other.
And with Alex Barcelo, it was interesting earlier today, Mark. Jay Billis from ESPN's College Game Days called Barcelo the best shooter in college basketball.
Yeah.
And it got Matt and I thinking, do you think Barcelo is the best shooter in BYU history?
That's always hard for me to say that. But, you look at the numbers, and I think he is. I mean, his ability to knock down the three I think the numbers will bear it out. I mean, when he's all done playing,
they do bear it out now, Mark. It's just it's pretty. His 3-point percentage numbers are so far and above anyone else's. It's not even funny.
What about Jimmer though?
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, Jimmer was
Nate
great.
Hall?
Go ahead, Mark.
Jimmer obviously is an amazing shooter, and the thing that makes it hard to compare him is Jimmer was just. I mean, he was like Showtime, exciting, what's he going to do next type guy. And Alex is more get the lunch pail and go out and just do the work, but as far as shooting percentages and Jimmer was a guy that could really create his own opportunities. And Alex, doesn't really have that ability. I mean, he when he has an open shot, he knocks it down, but he's Jimmer could shoot anywhere over half court basically. And did often. So, I mean, they're very different players, and I think Jimmer is a better player, no offense to Alex. But as far as shooting consistency, I mean, that would be fun to watch a game of horse between those two because Alex can really shoot the rock. And to be able to shoot, 90% and 50-50 from the field and the three-point line, that's just unheard of. And it's certainly over a career, the numbers Alex has put up is remarkable, and I would say he's probably the best shooter that I've seen at BYU.
A few more moments with Mark Durant. He'll be on the call tonight with Greg Wrubell for BYU in San Francisco. You can hear that here on KSL News Radio, tip 9 p.m., probably a little later if we're being honest. These tips always seem to get moved back as the day as the day goes on. But
on Big 12 tip times, please.
That's right.
Regarding this matchup tonight, because this will end a three-game stretch for BYU Hoops, it's really difficult and probably a window into the future. But regarding this game against the Dons, what do you think is a key for BYU to get a win?
In Texas,
I think it's just this critical game, obviously, like you're talking about. Obviously, when you talk about Gonzaga, if you look at it realistically, they're gonna win the conference. Probably not going to lose a game, and they're going to the tournament. All those things clearly and obvious, and hopefully maybe you can beat them at home. Maybe you have those hopes, but what you're really looking at, you kind of take Gonzaga out of the question. So, okay, they're separate. And now what do we have to do? We have to beat St. Mary's. We have to beat San Francisco because they're probably the two teams that are going to be fighting with us for second place or third place. And then for an NCAA tournament bid, right? And that's what your real goal is here. So you don't want to get behind against those types of teams, because when it comes down to it, I don't think the conference is going to get four bids. I think maybe three if they're lucky. So you need to be one of the teams that gets those bids. And San Francisco's the team that wants to take that away from you. And if you could get a win on their home floor, on the road, to start this conference season, that puts you in a great position. So how do they do it? Well, you know, you're going to have to address some of the concerns you had against Gonzaga the other night, because San Francisco's a high-scoring team. They shoot the three very well. They're really fast in transition, all the things that Gonzaga's good at. So, I mean, that makes you nervous if you're BYU, seeing you're going to play a similar type of game that you just got drilled playing against Gonzaga. With that said, BYU does really well on the Hill. They have a good record here. They feel comfortable here. And they're not going to be overmatched athletically or physically like they were possibly against Gonzaga. So I think the key is take away, Shabazz, particularly. He can create on his own. Really need to help with him. You need to take away the dribble penetration from Bouye. Do a solid job against the big fellow for, used to play at San Diego. I'm forgetting his name right now. Wasowski.
Yeah.
And I think if you do that, don't do anything special, but just shore up the defense more like what we saw against St. Mary's. Take care of the basketball so they're not getting easy transition buckets off turnovers. If you can do that, I like BYU's chances, and they really do a nice job bouncing back. Coach Pope has never lost two in a row, and this will be a real test for BYU to keep that streak alive.
Mark, you'll be on the Hilltop with Greg tonight. Has San Francisco gave any indication about maybe what the crowd will look like? Because I know with just the COVID restrictions around the West Coast, is there expected much of a crowd? I know San Francisco doesn't get much of a crowd before COVID, but is there going to be anyone really in the gym tonight?
I think there'll be some there. I had to just sign away my youngest child to go eat lunch in San Francisco, and so five forms of ID and COVID injection things. But so they're pretty strict about those kind of things here and take it pretty seriously. And but I think with that said, next door that I saw a line around two blocks going to see Harry Potter. So if people want to go see it, they'll go see it. But I think it'll be probably, it's not going to be a full house, but it'll be a nice little crowd. The gym is small to begin with, and so usually BYU fans as well come and show up a little bit. But I expect it'll be less than normal, and I don't think the crowd will make as big a difference. But, you know, they're with that said, San Francisco's having one of their better years ever, so we'll see if they turn out some of their faithful to come cheer on this team, because they're a good team.
Yeah, and I ask that just because I know BYU fans always show up in these West Coast Conference gyms, so we're looking forward to the call. Mark, you can follow him on Twitter, @DurantMark. He's a BYU Sports Network analyst, and you can hear his call with Greg Rebell at 9 p.m. tonight here on KSL News Radio. We always appreciate the time, as always, Mark.
You guys are the best. I'm happy to be on anytime. I appreciate all that you do, and we'll see if the Cougars can get it done tonight.
Sounds great. Have a good call, and we'll talk to you later. He is Mark Durant. We'll take the break here in Cougar Sports Saturday. More to go as we get ready for BYU in San Francisco. A sneaky, interesting game. In the early days of WCC, you'd fall asleep at this 9 p.m. tip, but this might be a game worth staying up late for. So we'll discuss that more here in hour number three, back after this. Sports Saturday here on KSL News Radio. Matt Biamonte and Mitch Harper coming at you. It's been a great show so far, and big shout out to Mark Durant, who, you know, who knows if he's going to tour The Rock Alcatraz while he's out in San Francisco, but we always love having him on, and he touched on that matchup tonight, which is a big matchup, because I do agree with Mark Durant that the four teams that are currently being projected to make the tournament, I just don't see that happening at the end of the day. I think it'll be whittled down to three. And if you get three, jump for joy. That's amazing for the WCC to get three teams in. But to be safe, you can really only count on two. Gonzaga takes one of those, and then there's one other one, and then after that, it's dicey. Like you may get in, you may not get in, and you already took care of St. Mary's, but the other team that's really making noise is San Francisco, and they're in a lot of ways, in my opinion, Mitch, and you saw these guys up close and personal in a random game at Salt Lake Community College, but I feel like they have a little Gonzaga potential there where they have some height, they have some shooting. This is going to be a tough game against San Francisco.
It really is, and you know it's hard to get past sometimes the brands of these teams and picture them as NCAA tournament squads, but San Francisco has quietly been on the rise. It started with Kyle Smith, who's now the head coach at Washington State, and now Todd Golden. He's a young understudy of Randy Bennett back in the day when he was a player at St. Mary's, and now on the San Francisco bench. He is one of the young, bright stars in college coaching, and he's got this Dons team playing really well. They're 15-2 overall. They are undefeated in league play, probably a byproduct of the fact that their early games against Gonzaga and St. Mary's were postponed. We would have really known how good they are in league play had those games already been under their belt. But San Francisco's legit as far as that guard line. And they got some bigs, as you noted, that could be some of the better players in the conference. Masalski, who transferred in from San Diego, the Toreros, he's one of the more efficient players in all of college basketball. He rarely misses from inside the arc. He doesn't shoot many threes at all, but he's a guy that around the basket, he is really good, and he's going to be a tough matchup for BYU. You just hope that BYU defensively, that success they've had really up until that Gonzaga game, shows itself in this matchup because San Francisco's a good offense. They could put up a lot of points. I just still don't trust BYU's offense enough to think what we saw in stretches against the Zags will show itself again against San Francisco. So you got to rely on the defense. And I think BYU's defensive effort has to be top shelf. There's been some weird games against San Francisco. It feels like whenever BYU plays on the hilltop, there's always some memorable performance. Last year it was Gideon George had a great game off the bench. Years ago, Matt Carlino popped off for a 30-piece.
Yep.
Nick Emery set the freshman record for most points scored in a BYU game. I don't know if that's sacrilegious to say that man's name when it comes to BYU basketball anymore, but Nick Emery once played and wasn't popping off on Twitter. Nick, he had a great game on the hilltop. So BYU San Francisco, it should be another really good matchup. 9 p.m. tip tonight, and I think, you know, if BYU loses tonight, I want to say to fans, it's not a sound the alarm moment. BYU will still be in the field of 68. I don't want to see, oh, welcome to the NIT, BYU. Like, they'll still be projected in the dance, but maybe it gets a little bit tougher because the opportunities for those signature wins start to shrink a bit if you lose tonight.
And here's the thing. You have to beat one of the two Bay Area teams on the road. So you already want to know against St. Mary's.
Yes.
You got a road game coming up against them. So if you lose this one, but you get St. Mary's, I think you'll still be at the top three, which also we should discuss the wacky WCC tournament. If you're a one or two seed, you're in Vegas having fun for a couple of days. Like you'll be waiting a lot. That thing starts on a Thursday and ends next Tuesday. And if you're a top two seed, you don't play till Monday. So you want to get these games to have some buys in the WCC tournament, but it's going to be a tough one.
It will be. Tip-off tonight, 9 o'clock, BYU, San Francisco from the hilltop, Cougars and the Dons. It should be a good game here tonight. We'll have coverage on KSLSports.com. Taking the break. On the other side, we'll talk some BYU football and also quite the accomplishment for BYU's fall sports. Coming up next here on Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com.
Sports Saturday is proudly brought to you by SRE.com. This is Cougar Sports Saturday. Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for three! Cougars by 20!
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans.
For Cougar fans.
It's Cougar Sports Saturday.
Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte.
On your legacy home of BYU Sports.
KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Welcome back into the show. Mitch Harper, Matt Biamonte. We're watching some NFL playoffs underway. The Raiders and the Bengals are in action right now. So NFL playoffs rolling along. No BYU ties in this game. I'm trying to think, who would be the great BYU player of the Bengals? Leon White was
Fui Vakapuna?
Yeah, Fui Vakapuna. Obviously for the Raiders, Mark Wilson was once a highly drafted pick.
Steve Young could have been a Bengals legend, but did not want to go to Cincinnati.
Todd Christensen was a silver and black great. Close to my heart, Todd Watkins, as the proud owner of a Todd Watkins Raiders jersey. Yes, I think I'm one of only two people on the face of the earth, Todd being the other one, that owns that jersey.
Did you know that Steve and the Bengals were linked? You had to have.
I did not.
So I'm reading.
Wasn't he linked to the Cowboys too?
I'm not sure. I'm reading a book on the USFL right now, which ironically that's coming back here soon. And when Steve was getting ready to leave BYU, there was the options, right? The NFL or the USFL. Mm-hmm. And it was the Bengals who had the number one pick, and they were a mess. Oh. And Steve Weich came into Provo and worked them out. And so it was like, what do I do? And then, you know, the LA Express story has long been told, and the checks that were never cashed and the mess. But it was either Cincy or the Express.
Man.
And Cincy was not good back then. No. And he stayed away. Little did he know that he'd be going to an equally disastrous franchise a couple years later in Tampa Bay. But Steve and the Bengals linked.
Yeah, I didn't know that about Steve Young. That's crazy. Yeah, Jason Buck was another Cincinnati Bengal. So, yeah, Steve Young, that was before Boomer Esiason, because Boomer was at Maryland, and then he ultimately took the reins in Cincinnati, and they went to a few Super Bowls. Didn't win one, but should be a good game today. Bengals, Raiders, two teams that are looking to end long playoff droughts. Raiders haven't won a playoff game since 2002. The Bengals haven't won one since like 93. Since I think Boomer.
I'm pretty sure the Bengals' last playoff win was when they injured Bo Jackson.
Yeah. Yep. I think so. So, yeah, NFL playoffs underway. Football season always going here at Cougar Sports Saturday. We're always following the latest on the gridiron. And one of the latest tidbits from the football world for BYU is associate head coach Ed Lamb linked to potentially the Hawaii Rainbow Warriors vacancy. ESPN's Adam Rittenberg tossed Ed Lamb's name around as a potential candidate. Do you think Ed Lamb could be on the move here soon, Matt?
Yes, I think that he could be on the move. Yeah, I believe that Ed Lamb one day, and that day may have arrived, will want to be a head coach again, because he was the head coach at SUU, and he's even said that before, since becoming the associate head coach for Kalani Sitake, that, you know, one day he'll want to run a program again. And Hawaii is such an interesting job, Mitch, because there are so many negative challenges with Hawaii that would make it so hard. But yet, there is so much talent that comes from Hawaii. If anyone could rein some of that in, Hawaii football would be good. I mean, we don't have the time to go down the list of guys in college football who come from the islands who are legit. And look, nobody knows this better than BYU football, because BYU football has made a living out of mining talent from the islands of Hawaii. So I imagine from that standpoint, because we've heard him linked to, he was like linked to Colorado State for a minute in Nevada, and I look at those and I'm like, I'm not leaving BYU for that. But Hawaii is really, really interesting. The scary thing for BYU, there's pros and cons with this rumor. Here are the biggest cons for me. Number one, it's a little late in the game. You're starting to prepare for spring football. Classes are in session. Weightlifting's happening. Do you want to have to find a new coach to replace Ed Lamb this late in the game? And look, it's not uncommon for guys to take jobs now and then never coach a game at that place before you move jobs. So you could probably fill that relatively easily. But to me, from an associate head coach position, is there anyone on the defensive staff that could easily be elevated? To me, personally, I don't know if there's an obvious candidate that you would just say, yes, let's promote this guy. Because on the other side, if Aaron Roderick were to leave somewhere, I think instantly you'd say it's Fessy Sitake. We're going to elevate him. He got the promotion to passing game coordinator. Let's move him on up. And I think all BYU fans would be on board with that. For the associate head coach, I don't know if there's someone on the defensive side that you would do that to. So that's the con. And then there's always the worry, does he bring some people too with him? And then you have more openings. But for sure, I think Ed Lamb is going to be in the mix. And that ESPN article also kind of referenced that he was the runner-up to Todd Graham, which I know that's a compliment, but you don't ever really want to be the runner-up. No. So I don't know. But take that for what it's worth, that he was – very far along in the process a couple of years ago. So there you go.
Well, he's got strong Hawaii ties with his recruiting, and I think that he wants the challenge of being a head coach. He was successful at a Southern Utah program that doesn't have much resources, and they won. I mean, they, I think in 2015, produced more NFL draft picks than BYU.
Wow.
In 2015, if you remember, they had like two picks out of SUU at that time. BYU had zero, and that was kind of like, how is this happening? Where BYU is not producing draft picks, where Southern Utah with Ed Lamb is. So when you look at Hawaii, they're similar in the sense where limited resources, they're out on an island, they're not close to anything. How do you develop from within and find these hidden under the radar gems? That's what you have to do at the Hawaii job, and Ed Lamb fits that to a T. Like, that is his MO. Like, he is all about finding these under-the-radar guys. You look at, like a George Udo.
Wilcox.
You know, exactly. Chris Wilcox, George Udo. Those are the types that he's found and had great success with in his BYU career. Now, in the flip side, he's also said, like, Joe Critchlow was going to be a great BYU quarterback, and, well, that didn't really work out. So there's you got to be fair on both
ways.
It goes both ways. But, yeah, I think it's a good thing for Kalani Sitake's staff to have coaches – that are linked to potential head coach vacancies, because, you know, I think that that's just a good thing, because Lavelle, he had that when, you know, Doug Scoville and Dewey Warren, Ted Tolner, guys came on the staff, Mike Holmgren, they came to BYU and then they moved on to bigger and better things for their personal football careers. And I think with going into the Big 12 soon, BYU assistant positions could be a lot more attractive, and there could be a bigger pool of candidates to work with. I think naturally the thought is always, well, BYU's got less. They're going to do more with less. So they're going to get this kind of off-the-grid analyst that's been a support staffer or someone who worked 4 years ago in coaching and now he's in the business sector, but now he's coming back to coaching. Like, no, like BYU can get full-time career-minded coaches into these roles. So whatever ends up happening with Lamb or any of the coaches, if they're linked with head coaching positions, I think BYU's in a better position to fill those gaps if needed. But you do bring up a good point. Spring football, it's about 6 weeks away from Monday. So it's just around the corner.
I will say this, though. BYU in the past, 15 years? You can count on one hand the coaches that have left to go on and do better things. Like, I think Jeff Grimes fits that mold. And, like, really – I'm actually struggling after mentioning Jeff Grimes' name. I just think eventually, here soon, you want some of these guys to leave. Not because they're not great coaches. And we had Hans Olsen on earlier, and he was like, you gotta keep him. I don't disagree with that, because you want to keep valuable coaches on the staff, but you can't retain them all the time. At some point, you want people to leave and branch out and give other guys opportunities. So I think, because of the timing, I want Ed Lamb back. But down the road with these scenarios, I'm okay with them leaving, not because I don't think they're good coaches, but because you want that coaching tree to grow. You want the legend of this BYU program to continue to grow. It's just a good thing in almost all aspect of business and life when people go on and achieve new things. You want your kids to live with you forever? Like, no. Eventually, you want them to go out and spread their wings and do things. But because it's so late in the game, I don't think you want to lose them right now.
I will say one of the things that's interesting about BYU, I think sometimes coaches are willing to maybe take less to coach at BYU because it's such a great program to be at. You get a guaranteed off day on Sundays.
Huge.
And that doesn't happen very often for a lot of staffs, where they work every single day, no matter what. And I think also recruiting-wise, you have a built-in foundation, a pipeline of athletes that want to be at BYU. They're LDS, so you don't have to just search far and wide for recruits. Now, it's going to be a bigger recruiting pool to work with when you're going to the Big 12, but still, I think there's some nice components that make coaches want to stay at BYU over, you know, take a position coach job in a P5 ranks or something like that. Where I think, and that was one of the big selling points for a lot of assistants for Lavelle too. Like Lavelle had a lot of guys that moved on, but there was a ton that stayed. You think about, you know, Roger French, Ken Schmidt, you know, Barry Lamb. Like there were so many guys that Tom Ramage that stayed on with Lavelle over the years, despite so many guys leaving. So, you know, BYU is a unique place. And I think a lot of coaches that come here, they enjoy being at BYU because people care too. BYU fans love BYU football. And I think that's one of the things that makes it an appealing place to stay at too, is that, you know, yeah, you could go to Hawaii, but I bet Ed Lamb, if he left and became the head coach there, he'd go, wow, there's a lot less interest in this program than what I was doing at BYU. There's no more coordinator's corner, and there's no more this and that. I don't know the media dynamics of Hawaii football, but I'm going to gander that there's not as much interest in the Rainbow Warriors as there is BYU football.
And you have to wonder, too, what role this plays, meaning they don't really have a home. Aloha Stadium has been decommissioned, which is a real shame, because I remember the first time I went to Hawaii back in 2016, seeing Aloha Stadium to me was like a eye-opening moment. I've watched that stadium so many times, NFL Pro Bowl. It was just like the Aloha Stadium on the island of Oahu was like, that was a cool place. And now it's just, it's rotting. It's rusting
Isn't
away.
Isn't it condemned?
Yeah.
Isn't it shut down?
Yeah. They did not play any football games there last year. And where's that going to be? You know, because that was a nice central. You've never been, but you need to go. But that was a nice.
Just throw it in my face, Matt. I enjoy this cold weather.
That was a nice place to get to a game because you could get there from all other places. If you're playing downtown Honolulu, first off, where is anyone going to park? There is nowhere to park down there. And then everyone from the other side of the island, like the Laie area, that's a long way away from here. So it's going to be interesting. I just bring that up from a facility standpoint because now you don't have what used to be an NFL-type stadium. Now you don't know where you're playing. There's not a lot of room to put anything new, so that is a challenge.
Remember the late, great Colt Brennan? He was former Hawaii quarterback. He said something to the effect of, we don't even have bars of soap. We have so little resources here at Hawaii. Like, it's a big job, and I think you kind of need a guy like an Ed Lamb that's willing to kind of dig in and be willing to do more with less. And some coaches aren't willing to do that. They need to have every bell and whistle known to man. Ed Lamb's not wired that way. From his success at both Southern Utah and BYU, he can do more with less. I think that's why he probably would be a good fit for the Hawaii job. So we'll continue to monitor that. We have a story up on KSLSports.com, which you can read right now. Taking a break, we'll put a bow on the show. It's Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com.
Welcome back in to Cougar Sports Saturday. Man, it's been a great show here, January 15th. Thanks for listening, however and wherever you listen. We always appreciate it. Be sure to listen to our podcast. If you've missed any of the show, you can subscribe to that wherever you get podcasts. And if you need a place to get those, the KSL Sports app is a great place to do so. Let's wrap this up, Mitch, with the hurry up. Bring in that appropriately themed music on NFL playoff Saturday. It looks like the Bengals have scored the first touchdown of the 2021-2022 NFL playoffs. Let's start with this. Football news. Sad football news, but Taysom Hill last week suffered a Lisfranc injury in his opposite foot, and he's going to have surgery on that. Just such a bummer. I mean, I guess the silver lining would be that the Niners knocked the Saints out of the playoffs, so we didn't have to sit through a Simeon game, but I really wanted him to play in the freaking playoffs because I felt like if he could have won a game or two, that maybe they run it back with him, but just another injury gets in the way for Taysom Hill.
We still don't know the extent to how long the timetable is that Taysom will be out, but I mean, BYU,
according to Sean Payton, he thinks he'll be back to start the year, but that seems like a lofty.
Well, I was going to say, BYU fans, our listeners know all too well the Lisfranc. Like, most media members probably said Lisfranc and didn't know how to pronounce it. Like, no. Like, BYU steps in like, hey, we know this. There was that year in, what was it, 2014, 2015, where I swear every BYU player in fall camp went down with a Lisfranc and going, what in the world's happening here? Who's running these cleats? Like, what is happening that caused all of this? But such a bummer for Taysom. You know, your heart breaks for that guy because this was his window, his chance to take that hold. And
he was succeeding.
Yeah.
Like he was going to Winston gets them to 5-2. Simeon couldn't win a game. And then he brings them back to playoff contention. And then this. So just a...
He's been through a lot.
He's been through... This is why I think BYU fans like myself are just so heavily invested in Taysom Hill, because he continues to find ways to stay relevant, even with all the injuries. So, look, I hate saying this. I'm thankful he got paid. I'm just sick of saying that with BYU NFL players, that, hey, at least he got paid. I'm like, I feel like he could still be an NFL quarterback, but these injuries are at some point are going to get – the age plus the injuries may eventually get in the way.
Yeah, I mean, knee, Liz Frank, elbow, that was all at BYU. And
now now you got...
And then he had the finger, the mallet finger injury,
and he had
concussion.
Plantar
fasciitis.
Yeah, he went through it all. The concussion was a nasty one. It was a tough year for his health.
I just hope that he can get healthy, get back to 100%, because if there's one man that can bounce back, it's Taysom Hill. Like, that guy just... I mean, who thought he was going to be in the NFL at this point? I think many thought he was going to be in Wall Street.
Yep.
And he's still this far removed from his BYU career, still competing at a high level. And I shouldn't expect anything less from Taysom Hill. Some other football news for BYU, this current program. Victory Vaca enters the transfer portal. Not a real surprise. He was a preferred walk-on. Originally, though, a heralded recruit out of California, three-star, four-star, depending on the service. Defensive tackle. I think that was kind of what made it a little bit discouraging, was like, hey, 6'3", 335. Be interesting to see what that guy could do in the interior of the line. But, hey, he's now going into the transfer portal.
Sticking with some football news, Tyler Allgeier getting ready for the NFL draft. He's earning some high rankings from various outlets. Bleacher Report has him as a top 50 prospect. That would put him on the fringe of the first round, early
number 38
second.
Overall.
That's impressive. I think as he interviews and his story becomes more well-known in the NFL, it's going to rise up. This is a dude who played in the UAB bowl game to the Independence Bowl. So I think whatever his stock is now, I think there's room for it to grow before the NFL draft.
Basketball, Yoli Childs traded to the Salt Lake City Stars. So Yoli's back in town with the NBA G League. And then Jay Billis from ESPN, he called BYU guard Alex Barcelo the best shooter in the country. Called him that today. So your hot take of Barcelo being the best shooter in BYU history, well, it adds a little bit more clout with him being dubbed the best shooter in the country this season.
And Mark Durant validating me earlier in hour number two was one of my highlights as a host on a Cougar Sports Saturday.
Yes.
So I feel a little more... I feel I have some accolades now with the great Mark Durant agreeing with me.
BYU, San Francisco tonight, 9 o'clock tip. Pre-game starts at 8 here on KSL News Radio. And if you miss any part of our show, download the podcast on kslsports.com.
All right. For Mitch Harper, our producer, Dallin Graff, our board op, Dave Meekum, I'm Matt Biamonte. Thanks for listening to another edition of Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by kslsports.com.
I'm Dave Cauley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.